sometimes you're just pushed as the video guy. So they don't expect ideas from you. They don't expect you to be heard because you're like, you're just the guy behind the camera. So especially when I started doing a lot more like YouTube stuff and like podcasting and trying different things, I was like, I'm not the video guy. I do visual arts in what I produce. So that's always been the goal for me, to just be seen as someone that does visual arts, whether that's photography, graphics, videography, and just allowing that to speak for itself.
Welcome to the Valuable Podcast, where there is value in every conversation. I'm your host, Victor Sasanya, and today I'm joined by Torin Joshua, visual arts creator specializing in film and photography. In this episode, we discuss how Torin quit his job in Iceland to work on his media business, and he also explains how he came to work with big clients such as Guap and what it means to be a creative. First things first, shout out Zencaster, who is the sponsor of this episode and season 2 of the Valuable Podcast. Zencaster is an all-in-one podcasting platform, which I've personally used from day one to record my podcast. So there's no lies told. I know this platform. I record both quality audio and HD video online using Zencaster. So if you want to start a podcast, then you can too, with 30% off your first 3 months. So go to zen.ai/valuable1 and use my promo code valuable1. Alternatively, just click the link in the description below, then apply the code valuable1. Zencaster has over 10,000 podcasters like myself in the Creator Network, and they are successfully matching brands and companies with podcasters every day. So even if you're a brand interested in sponsoring this show or running podcast ads to grow your business, go to zen.ai/valuablepod1 and fill out the contact information so Zencaster can help you bring your business dreams to life. Without further ado, let's get straight into this episode. Yes, we are back. Another episode, another full-blown conversation filled with lots of value. Today I'm joined with Torin Joshua, a very, very valuable guest, and a digital nomad. Am I pronouncing it correct?
Yeah, something like that.
digital nomad. And yes, man, welcome to the Valuable Podcast. I'm so excited to have you. And you want to quickly just introduce yourself?
Yeah, well, you summarized me in a good way. Yeah, my name is Torin Joshua, digital creator. I do stuff like photography, videography, just anything in the creative space at the moment. And yeah, I'm just excited to be on this show and just chat to you and just like chop it up, really.
Yeah, no, I love speaking with creatives because they bring a different energy and different perspectives. Like compared to if I speak to like students or corporates, creatives is just a different sort of vibe. And I love it because recently I've been called a creative. I'm starting my podcast and it's just I'm connecting with a range of different people. But I want to understand that actual term that I just previously used, digital nomad. Like, what does that actually mean?
So for me, like when it comes to my Instagram bios and stuff, I love putting stuff like that makes me feel like it's a chapter in my life or what my next kind of goal is or what I want to start being like recognized by, identified by, not necessarily for other people, more so just like myself. So I was watching like a YouTube video about this like creator, and he travels the world and does all different things. And he was just talking about the kind of age that we're living in and the fact that we can literally, in the job that I do, I can literally technically work wherever I want. The fact that I'll be editing on the train or sending stuff on at my home in Coventry rather than here in Manchester. And it's just the thought of being a digital nomad is the thought of you can work from anywhere, you can do anything, but your career is digital. So I think I really want to strive for being able to be flexible in terms of location, where I'm working, how I'm working and what I'm doing. So that's kind of the goal for me at the moment, just being a digital nomad, just traveling, doing different things and growing that way.
No, I hear that, and especially with this new way of living after the pandemic, things are digital, people work from home, so that's already kind of fitted into your dream, and I guess that to get there it's been an accelerated path. But where did you like what location, where did you grow up, and where did digital come into the picture?
Yeah, so I'm originally from London. I was born there, but only lived there for like 2 years or so. So I'm not acquainted to the culture like that. But because I'm from Coventry and that's where I was raised, I love to tell people I'm from London because Coventry was a bit techie growing up. Do you know what I mean? But yeah, I grew up in Coventry. It was a small place. Nothing really is going on like that. It was only around, I'd say, just before, I'd say sixth form was when I started to get into like the digital space. I ended up taking a course in film, just to have like as a DOS subject in the background. But then when I was doing it, I just started, I fell in love with editing. I fell in love with like doing like little tricks and stuff. Like I remember the first time I made two versions of myself appear on the screen at the same time. I was like, yo, this is cold. But I think the stuff like that, I just fell in love with that. And then, yeah, I originally really wanted to go do psychology at university, but I took a leap and I was like, you know what, let me take a gap year out. Let me experiment with this creative stuff. I'm really enjoying like figuring out about cameras and all these different things. And then took the gap year out. And now I'm here.
Wow. And so what did you do on your gap year?
So my gap year was literally, I asked my mom for a loan so I could buy a camera. And then me and my boys would just go out and do random things. Like we'd do random studio shoots, or a lot of my people in Coventry, they used to like rap and stuff. So I did a couple music videos. And I just used that year to just experiment and try things in terms of like cameras and digital spaces, going to like digital creative events and all these different things. And that's basically what I just kind of did, as well as working alongside to kind of obviously have savings for uni and stuff like that. That was basically the life that I lived.
So from sixth form, you literally took that gap year and you doubled down in that year to basically get into all things digital, all things creative. And is that where you learned how to use the camera? Because you say it so easily that you just jumped into photo shoots, shot a couple music videos. Like, yeah, honestly, yeah. It's not the same. So like, when was the first time you actually picked up a camera and sort of learned how to use it?
Yeah, so the first time I picked up a camera in a way where I was trying to make something was probably my first year of sixth form when I started doing the film course. It's so funny because me and my boys, it was two of my boys. So me, my boy Kevin and my boy Imad, like we were all kind of doing the same thing at the same time, like photography and videography and stuff. And we laugh about that gap year now because we're like, there'll be times we're on shoots and we don't know how to make the image brighter or how to actually like put the flash on the camera and stuff like that. And we used to just have to go home with just terrible pictures. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because no one would ever see the stuff that was made during, you know, gap year times. But it's funny when we look back now and like, sometimes those were the purest moments where we're just out trying random things and doing, you know, the most crazy thing. So I'd say the first time I felt like qualified and like I was actually able to take photos and stuff, yeah, was probably my first year of uni. I'd say that's when I was like, yeah, okay, I'm actually kind of comfortable behind the camera.
And is that when you got your first sort of paid gig, or were you just shooting for free?
My first paid gig must have been, I think it was literally just the end of my gap year. And I remember like it was for a barber company. They were doing they had like a booking system and they wanted to do like promotional videos and stuff. And I remember I filmed it and stuff and I did it, but I genuinely didn't think it was good. I was like, oh my gosh, like I can't believe I wasted their time, all of this. And the thing is, no one agreed about doing any money or anything like that. Mm. And I got a phone call from them. They're like, yeah, we really love it. Yeah, we're going to send you X amount to your account. And I almost cried. I was like, I can get paid for this. Like, it was crazy. That was the moment where I was like, I can make money doing this.
Yeah.
And then from there, it started to turn more into like a business thing. Like, okay, let me chase this.
Okay. And so how old were you back then?
Probably 19. I'd say, yeah, 19.
Wow. And you in the space of a year. So we're talking like under 12 months. You basically, you told me you picked up that camera for the first time, learned how to use it. Now people are paying you in order to shoot different promotional videos, etc. And I guess in that period as well, because you told me that you were actually planning to do psychology at university, but after your gap year, 360, because now you're doing
fully digital, man.
Media. So what were you studying at university, and like what made that change from psychology?
So I'm currently studying digital media and communications at Manchester Met. I think for me, I did psychology for A-levels as well. And when I was studying it, as much as I don't think I loved the subject psychology, but I think I loved the activity of psychology. So like understanding people and seeing why people think. I love connecting with people and being like, let me pick your brain about what you think about the world and what's going on. So I think that's what I loved about the psychology aspect. But in terms of, is this something that I want to go into? I started looking about careers and the, you know, the progression path and stuff. And I was like, I don't know if doing a doctorate is me. I don't know if I want to get into counseling and all these different things. And I think with the digital media side of stuff, I just started to see where the world was going. We're going into a technology age. everybody was at before. I think at that point, like before I went to uni, I don't think content creation was as hype as it was now. But yeah, there was that trend of, okay, Love Island people are coming out, like content creation is becoming a thing. So it's like media is becoming a thing. Let me just go in and then see what happens.
So you sort of latched on to it quite early then. You saw that trend.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, that's crazy. And in the, you know, if you just fast forward 3 years, now you've worked with so many different brands, companies, like well-known names. I mean, how many brands or organizations have you now worked with in terms of photography?
So I'm trying to think. It's, you know what it is? Yeah, I don't even, it happens when you're in it, you don't even really think back. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't even really look back and be like, oh, I've done this, and this. It's only when I sort of started to put together a portfolio, I was like, oh, I actually have some solid stuff. So a lot of the things I work with has been through word of mouth, just people down the road around me, whether it's a friend of a friend and stuff that they do. So I couldn't give a number right now off the top of my head, but yeah, I've done random stuff from weddings to promotional videos to short documentaries to music videos, just all over the place.
Yeah, and it's crazy because you're not, like, how can I say this? I've seen your work, and if you're listening, don't worry. I will link Torin Joshua's work in the bio, wherever you're listening, and you get to see his portfolio for yourself, because it's not like your work is average. I've actually seen the quality, the editing, the, like, everything, and I'm just like, I'm so amazed. And the fact that you do photography, but you also do videography. Mm-hmm. So you do two in one. Right. And I wondered, like, how does one get good at both? Because I heard a saying that a man who tries to catch two rabbits, you know, catches none. And in that saying that you can't basically try to specialize in two different things, because I know some photographers that are just photographers and they're dope photographers. They're good at what they do. I know some videographers that are just videographers and they're, again, very, very good at what they do. Then I know people who are just editors. So they just edit photos or they just edit videos. But you're doing all of that. So
yeah,
how, tell me how.
That's good. I think a lot of it genuinely comes down to necessity. Like, again, during that gap year when we're doing random projects and me and my boys are on random shoots, it was down to the point of we need photos taken as well as video, or vice versa in it. So I feel like my pure initial love, the one that I actually prefer, is videos. Like, videography and video editing, like, those are my two that I would always go to. Like, photography is just it just turns out that I happen to be able to do it too. Because like, once you figure out the camera, you're able to kind of work out both worlds, because it's kind of the same science.
Yeah.
But again, it's just down to what you prefer and what you like. And I think essentially it's not necessarily to do with what you're doing, it's more to do with the eye. And I think that's what I've started to kind of develop in that sense. It's like, okay, this is the particular style that I want when it comes to photography. Because compared to a lot of photographers, I'm not good. Like, there's so many different photographers in specific situations. I'm just good at doing the style that I've practiced for 3 years, if that makes sense.
Oh,
so
sweet.
It's only because I've got good at a specific style of it that it's made it a thing to me. But yeah, I think,
what is your style? What is your style? What have you been practicing for the last 3 years? And you talked about you have an eye for something. So,
So for me, firstly, I really love colors. But I love the orange and the blue, as you can tell in my room. Like, those two colors are just like my favorite two colors to kind of incorporate into like imagery and stuff like that. And I've always seen photography as a thing as it's the actual taking the photos is half the job, and then the other half is the actual photo editing. So for me, it's like, okay, how can I take a capture capture something that puts me in a place where I can edit in a particular way? So I love stuff like color grading and like changing the aspects of the photo. So I think for me, in terms of my style, is keeping stuff raw and stripped back, but then allowing space for colors and like contrast to be added in post. So I think that's kind of my main focus with that at the moment.
And on the video element as well, on the video side, if that's your main passion, how did you learn to shoot videos and turn that into like a great, whether that's a great promo video? You mentioned you do some documentary, so this is like so many different facets. So how did you manage to do that?
YouTube, man. Literally, everything I learned was just YouTube. Like, when I was first started working out and people were like asking me if I did X, Y, Z or did this, or do you know how to do music videos? I'd say yes, even if I didn't know how to do it. And then I'd just spend all that time on YouTube looking at, oh, how to shoot a music video, 5 steps to planning a YouTube video, all those kind of things. And then I just pretended like I knew what I was doing and it worked out all right.
No, and you know what? That's actually something that most people do. And I've done it myself. I heard, no, it's a famous saying that, you know, say yes and figure it out later. Because sometimes so many people, they actually lock the door or they shut the door on their on themselves, right? Because somebody asks them for something and they've never done it before. So you're sort of like, oh, sorry, no, I don't know how to do this. But when someone asks you something, you want to take that bold step and that leap and that jump saying, you know what, I'm competent, right? So I'm competent and maybe I can do this. So, oh, yeah, sure. Then you have that time frame in order to basically double down and learn how to exactly to do this. So that was your case and you sort of spent a lot of time on YouTube then.
Yeah, for sure. Like YouTube, just Googling. And again, if I don't know, I know someone that knows it or I can find the information from somewhere. So even if I can't do it, I'll say yes and then get someone else to do it or connect that person with them. Do you know what I mean? So I think, as you said, I think it's just saying yes to the random things and seeing how the opportunities kind of work themselves out. And that's just kind of the things I've done with everything, whether it's photography, video editing, videography, all of those kind of things, really.
Yeah. And it's funny that you sort of just never pass up the opportunity because you can always transfer that to someone in your network and that person who's asked you initially is still happy because you've sort of referred them someone who can still fulfill that job.
Yeah. And then at that point, you're building a good relationship with that person because you've given them a need, you've helped their need whilst also kind of not creating a bad thing for them if you like took on the job and stuff. So I think, again, building that relationship and connecting people and doing those things, that's kind of like also its own subtle key to kind of making moves and connections, I think.
Yeah, no, that's big. And whilst you were like working on your craft and you're, you know, shooting for different clients and taking videos, you're at university studying digital and media communications and you're also working. I think you've done a part-time job at Iceland for like how many years was that?
I worked at Iceland for about 4 years. So that was during my gap year and then pretty much all of uni, really.
What's that like? Like, what's that like going to a part-time job? Probably, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, stacking shelves, taking out stock lists and scanning products when you have this burning passion for trying to get better at videography, photography, and of course, having that end goal to become a digital nomad.
I think about it a lot. Like, I used to always think about, like, I've always had this perspective where I kind of used to see life as a movie and be like, oh, you know, I'm just basically, I'm living in my documentary while I'm living it, innit? So I feel like I'm very sensitive to like moments and like the season of life and like the different periods of the story and stuff like that. And I think Iceland for me was always that hustle period of me, like, oh, Iceland's going to be the thing that I'm going to tell people about where I was working, where I first started, all these things. Like, I used to record, like, take videos at work, me just working, just because I was like, one day it's even going to be in a documentary or like I'm going to have to put it in a video. And it's actually kind of worked out now when I start talking about all the things. But I've just always had that perspective of being like, you know what, don't rush to try and get somewhere, like, be in this moment. And to be honest, it worked out all right because it was paying well. And so my specific role that I used to get good at was working in the cold, like, what's it called? The cold stock. So working in the freezers and all these kind of things. Mm. And I actually loved it because I was able to be in the freezers, putting the stock away for like an hour, 2 hours. And that just allowed me to think. It allowed me to just try different things. The amount of ideas I got just being stuck in the freezer at Iceland. Those are like, to me now, it's like I don't get that time anymore. And even now, like, now that I don't work there anymore, I actually sometimes always say, like, I just miss it. Like, I miss that feeling of, like, you know, feeling like I wasn't sure about what's the next steps or even thinking about, am I even going to make it in this career of like digital media or anything like that. And yeah, it was a journey. And I do always think back to it now. And I know it's going to be a big part of my life for sure.
And it's so good that you started to document the journey from young, because I feel like that's actually a very, very smart and wise thing to do, because it's the story and the process that so many people are in touch with, right? And what you see is like, or what I see anyway, is when you see that successful person, you see them in their black and white picture and like McDonald's or something.
Literally.
Or even the Jeff Bezos and the different billionaires in the world, you see them where they were sitting down at a desk or in a garage with papers and files. And you actually no one actually stopped to deep, like, wait, who actually took this picture?
Literally.
Does that make sense? So you've been sort of documenting your time working at Iceland, and hopefully, you know, that would be used in the future to show exactly the humble beginnings you came from. And for me as well, I feel like my flagship story is just me selling chicken wraps in school. Mention it everywhere.
Oh, yeah, I heard you talk about it on a different episode. I was dying.
Yeah. And it's true. It's real rap. And the thing is, I used to have lots of different photos, but basically my phone must have, I had an old phone and like the storage wasn't backed up and it broke. So I lost most of it. So I only got the ones I had in sixth form, but I still use it every now and then just to sort of keep me grounded. Oh, this is where, you know, this was the start of the hustle period, like yourself.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Where I started to build up, if that makes sense. You quit Iceland, right?
Yeah, I quit it just at the end of last year.
So what was that decision process like? Like, what was the motivation for quitting? Did you sort of take that plunge that you're going to go full time in what you're doing now? Or
So this was about July. It was coming to like the end of lockdown. We were getting that feeling of, okay, the world is coming back to normal now. Obviously during 2020 to 21, I barely did anything in terms of like the creator wise, in terms of doing it out like client work. It was more so just me creating like random YouTube videos or doing random things, like more so for myself. I think those periods where I was building like my personal brand and stuff like that. And then coming to that summer, I was like, you know what? I think it's time to start trying again and time to start like building this. So I think that was that period of going through that. Like, I did a boxing match during the time and I was like, after this boxing match, as soon as I finish, it's a new season and it's a new time to start attacking this career in that sense. So I finished that boxing match around July and I was like, okay, I want to, by November, by my birthday, I want to be out of Iceland. Started applying for jobs. I was like, it's time to get into the industry. Started applying for different jobs and stuff like that. And then I think by mid-September, I'd got like a job. And I was like, cool, I think it's time to leave. And then I took that leap.
Yeah. And so what job is that?
So this job was doing like SEO writing. So as much as I love like the creative side as well, I really love the marketing side of things, because I feel like that's where the two of my passions kind of merge in terms of the psychology of people plus the creative. It kind of merges into like marketing in it. So I started applying for all those marketing jobs and it was to do with SEO writing. So basically helping companies rank higher onto like Google, basically. That was what I was working on.
Okay, so you went basically... just finished your retail shifts, like you came out of the retail industry and you came into a marketing job. And has that, like, in terms of even that job of learning about marketing, has that helped you land some clients? Because I know that you've worked with some big names like Guap, Accelerate Me, Common Sense Network as well. I think you've done some great work. So with all of these different clients that you've worked with, like, is there anyone that's been memorable or been significant on your journey?
Yeah, to be fair, I think all of them in their own way, you know, like all of them came in such different periods of my life. Like I want to release a video soon about talking about that Guap job, because it wasn't a big deal. It wasn't anything that was mad, but the story itself was so interesting and like, it was like I can't believe this is even happening type thing. And even the way it happened during lockdown. And yeah, if you want to go into it, you can. But again, there was just different. They all have a different story on how it even got to that point. And I think that's why all of them have its own little place. Do you know what I mean?
No. Talk about it. Because Guap is it's a massive, you know, I think it's massive for our culture in terms of, you know, the black talent that is helping out. And just talk about how you sort of came to even work with them.
Yeah. So I think that Guap job was it's probably the biggest thing that I've done so far in terms of like intrinsically, in terms of value to myself. It was during lockdown. And again, lockdown was where I just decided to experiment and kind of sort of grow my personal brand in that sense. And TikTok was blowing them days. That's where everything was going. So I decided one day, I saw a trend that was going on about FaceTime photo shoots. And I was like, you know what? It seems fun. So I got one of my friends to like hop on FaceTime. We started taking photos and stuff like that, which was so jarring because I'm having to screenshot and tell her, oh, like move this way, put the camera here, do this, and then screenshot it and then edit it and post and stuff like that. I actually kind of enjoyed it, but I was like, okay, you know, I'm going to try and do it again, but I actually planned like an editorial style. So me and my other friend, we did like a work from home photography shoot, got her to dress up in office clothes and then just made like a really cool shoot or whatever. And then that was that. Like I was done, posted it to Instagram, minding my business. And then Guap, the CEO of Guap, he released a tweet saying, oh, we need someone that's capable to do FaceTime photo shoots. Someone tagged me in that. And then I sent my work off. The way I typed that email so quick. sent off the two random pieces that I did. And then within the next day, I got a response. But even before that, I hopped on another trend. Before I even emailed them anything, I hopped on another trend. I don't know if you remember, but during lockdown, there was the Vogue challenge that was going on.
Yeah, people edit their picture on the Vogue magazine.
So I hopped on one of those too, and I was like, oh, that was quite cool. I did like a self-portraits thing in quarantine, posted that too. And then I saw it, what I had made, and I was like, you know what, one day I'm going to shoot for a magazine. Like, I just made that a random go in my head. And then the next day, that's when I got the email back saying, yeah, we want to hire you to do that. We want to help hire you to do a FaceTime photo shoot to help, you know, with this video magazine and stuff like that. And I was gassed. I was like, I'm going to get paid to sit in my room and take photos through screenshotting. Mm. That sounds amazing. That sounds amazing. But yeah, so then hopped on a call with some of the models and stuff like that and then just used what I had been doing already. And that's kind of how it all worked.
Wow, that's amazing. So at this point in time now, like, people are paying you for different things, not just videography, but also photography. And I just wonder, like, can you make a living being a full-time photographer, right? Of course, because I see people are photographers, but they do sort of different side jobs unless you're really, really made it. And, you know, I literally went to my friend's launch event, Abianca. She runs a publication called AWOL Prints. And part of one of her stories, she interviewed someone called Brunel Johnson. And he basically made a quote and he said that photographers live a champagne lifestyle on a supermalt salary.
Whoa.
I was like, whoa, reading that myself. Like, so, I mean, does what you do pay, if that makes sense? You know, the photography, the digital creative sort of lifestyle.
Mm. I think, obviously, like, I don't have a house or anything mad like that. So, again, I don't know how this is going to transfer when I'm, like, needing to pay real money. But, again, a lot of the people that I know and the people that, like, are further ahead than me in what they do, that specifying just one, some of these men are making bread. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, one of the things that used to scare me a lot when before, like, fully diving into this was the whole thing of the starving artist and feeling like, oh, if I choose this career path, I'm not going to be able to have, like, a rich life or even just have, like, a well-off life. You're going to be a starving artist living in a small apartment, not having any real money. But, again, when you're exposed to the right people and in the right circumstances and people start teaching you the game of how it works, that's when things start to change. And I think one of the things that I've really started to adopt in my life now is now that I'm at a place where I'm able to do what I do full time, it's now starting to talk to people about how to make money doing it, or just what I've learned so far, being like, guys, there's money here, this is what you can earn by just doing this. And it's kind of just opening their eyes and being like, it's possible. And then once people start demanding the rates that they deserve, then the industry is just going to start blowing. And again, right now there's a demand for it. Everyone's a content creator, everyone needs photographers and videographers. So I think if anything, it's going to start booming over the next couple of years.
No, you're 100% correct in the sense that even I need videographers, photographers, everyone does, especially when you're trying to build a brand in this new age. And I like the fact you said that, okay, you know, come a point in time, you're demanding sort of the rates you deserve. Now, this is a valuable podcast and we like to share value and talk about how our guests, you know, share value and become valuable, because I know a lot of different people want to work with you. So how do you, as Torin Joshua, provide value to other people, if that makes sense?
Yeah. One of the things that I really want to do every time I get someone asking me about creating something, for me, it's really breaking down to the heart of what they need rather than just doing what they ask. Because a lot of the times as well, sometimes, like, maybe business owners and stuff like that, sometimes they don't actually necessarily know what's going to work. They've just probably seen something that they're like, this looks cool, I can see this on my brand or my situation. But then it's like, if one of your goals is brand awareness, there's no point creating a a video that's going to be helping with your sales. Do you know what I'm saying? It's like, you really need to understand what the heart of what you're doing is. And even myself as well, it helps me create better, because I can't film something in a way that's going to communicate a different message to what you actually need and what you actually want. So I'll just say, in terms of the value, it's really spending the time and the effort being like, okay, what do you actually need? And having the courage to be like, I feel like your idea is wrong. This is why I think maybe this might be the best option. And to be fair, that comes with a lot of confidence, and it's something I've only learned probably in the last 3 or 4 months.
Wow. Yeah. So what? So you now advise, so I came to you with an idea. So I tell you about my business. I tell you about the video shoot or the photos that I want to complement my sales or something. You might, just for me relaying my vision to you, you might now tell me, okay, no, this is how we should do it.
Yeah. I think for me, the reason why I never used to do it before, like, I'd be sat there filming knowing that I feel like it's the wrong thing to do. It felt more so like a thing of like, okay, I just don't have the confidence yet, imposter syndrome, all these things. I'm just a video guy. But I was having a conversation with Josiah, you know, Mr. 200Ms, and he was just opening up and being like, look, the best thing to do is, again, provide, as you said, provide value. And the only way to provide the best value is by doing what you do. And the more jobs that I'm taking where I'm doing things that aren't actually achieving things, and it's actually wasting my own time at the same time. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, because he framed it in a great way of being like, sometimes he might get a client come and reach out to him and be like, we want to shoot. And then they'll be like, okay, we need a full day shoot doing X, Y, Z. And then he'll be like, to be honest, you only need a half day shoot. So the fact that he's providing value, being like, we can do this in more efficient time and willing to cut the cost that he's going to make that day, it was to show that his heart's in it rather than just doing what he's doing to get by. And I think that really inspired me to be like, you know what, if I have an idea, let me say it. And even if it doesn't happen in the end, it's about going back and forth and figuring out something in the middle. So yeah, there's been a journey of that for sure.
No, that's powerful. And it's in terms of like your integrity, because like you just mentioned, you can easily just say, no, this requires 2 days shoot. Facts, and get facts. More money. But if you're actually working with that client and you are sort of like a creative director as well, and a consultant, so you're wearing many different hats in this point of time. And is that how you get sort of repeat customers, like, and repeat business?
Yeah, for sure, because that's when people know that you care. You know, it's more than just a cash grab. You're actually doing something because you're like, I've listened to what you need, and this is what I actually think is the best option. And that will hopefully build the relationship even better.
Yeah. And so what are sort of the cost, or should I say, that comes with being, what are the costs that are associated with this role, being a creative and being a photographer, videographer, and just trying to bring people's visions to life?
I think definitely first is, in terms of like equipment, all of those things, there's at the beginning, there's a huge part where you need to invest a lot into the things that you're doing. So like, obviously a camera, lighting, gimbals, if you want to do videography properly, lenses. People don't realize this, but lenses are actually the thing that rents your money, not the cameras. So it's all those different way. Yeah, you might see lenses that are more expensive than the cameras. And if you need 3 or 4 different lenses, then it's a bit, do you know what I mean?
I mean, how much are we talking? Like, what's, if someone wanted to break in and get their first camera and all of this equipment you're saying, like, how much are we talking in terms of money?
I'd say at the very beginning, obviously, if you ain't got the money to do it, I'd say the essentials that you need is a camera that comes with a kit lens, and depending on what you want to do, say if you wanted to do like a YouTube channel, I'd say invest in lighting, because again, lighting and lenses are the two things that rent your money. And then probably just a microphone. Like, with those three, you can start out, and then you can start, you know, making money from there. But then once you have those, it's about building over time, and then you start to build your supplies up, and then you get all the things you have, really.
Yeah. So can I invest that with £100, £500?
Oh, nah, you're probably looking at like, I'd say budget around like £700.
Ooh.
For the first. But again, if you just want to get a camera first, you can get my camera was £500 the first time I got it, and you can get it where it's on finance or whatever as well. Like, that's an option as well. So I'd say if you really just want to get bare minimum, I'd say about £500 is probably your base stock.
So there's basically an investment to enter into this industry. So the barriers are not that low, but and I guess over time you have to improve your equipment in order to improve your work. Yeah. So is there like also a sort of mental cost that comes with the work you're doing?
Yeah, for sure, man, for sure. Because again, especially with the freelance way of life, sometimes you don't know when that paycheck is coming. You don't know if you're going to be able to, like those periods last year where it'd be 3 months and I haven't done anything. It was just lucky at that time I was working at Iceland, you know what I mean? So just the anxiety of knowing if I finish uni and I decide to do this full time, I might not have a paycheck in March, or do you know what I mean? Like those kind of things. Yeah. But I think as well, for me personally, the mental cost has been mostly making the decision to chase it, even though it means sacrificing a lot of different things. Like being at uni, there's been times where I've missed out on motives and different things and different, like connecting with people and doing all different things that I want to do just because I'm in a shoot in Coventry or a shoot in London or something like that. And I've had to just sacrifice that and be like, it's going to be worth it, hopefully.
Yeah, and I can see that you also post quite openly and transparent on your Instagram page or Twitter in terms of the journey and in terms of the process, if that makes sense, and what you go through, and how like people should not just, I guess, look at the surface, like all the work you're doing, but actually what it requires and what it takes. And I mean, you, on one of the videos you actually shot about being a creative, you sort of said that you don't like the word creative.
Yeah.
So, I mean, break that down to me. Like, what does a creative mean to you? And why have you not taken a liking to the word?
It's funny because nowadays I just accept it because it's the easiest way to communicate what I do to people. But I think at the time where I made that video, it was probably like 2020, like early lockdown. The word creative, or you know, creatives, is there's a very strong community feel to that, which is great because you know it's like you got your people get to connect and network and stuff. But sometimes it feels like an exclusive club. And I didn't like at the time where I wasn't as affirmed in what I was doing or feeling like I was even like that way, like especially with creatives as well. There's a very particular, I'd say, style into what type of person that was. And I just didn't feel like I was that person. Like I didn't feel like I connected to the creative community like that, even though I was doing what a lot of people in the creative community do. So I was just thinking like that element of feeling like, I guess, separated from this community and these people, I didn't like that exclusion. So I think when it comes down to creatives, I was looking around, I was like, everybody is a creative. Everybody creates, whether it's writing or, again, fashion and how they dress and all these different things. Like, that video was more so for the people that may have felt like they were a creative and couldn't express it because they didn't feel like they were a part of that community. It's being like, look, don't let just what people are telling you allow you to define yourself and cut yourself back. You are a creative. You do create art. You do create. So live your life. Live your life. Don't worry about being in any clubs or anything like that. And it was more so just a message to myself. It was like, I don't have to wear baggy jeans and have a certain way of dressing just to be a creative person. Like, I am. That's who we are. Do you know what I mean? So, yeah.
Oh, that's big. And see, that's what I'm talking about, because myself, like, remember, I didn't think I was a creative. Right, because like you said, it the word creative had this club, it had this association. You had to look a certain way, post a certain way, be so free and flexible in a certain way. Does that make sense? Like, if you were if you were just not part of that, it's hard to call yourself a creative. So you were basically saying that no, everyone's a creative, basically, and it depends on what you create. And you talked about, for you, what the term you sort of use now as well, that you create a lot of visual arts and you're in that industry. So do you want to quickly explain what that means?
Yeah, I like to put it as visual arts because it's like, again, I like to focus on stuff like videography and communicating visually and stuff like that. Like, what I love about what I do is the science of it, and whether that's the science of storytelling or the science of communicating visually. So like, even stuff like color grading, people don't recognize how that contributes to story or how the aspect ratio contributes to the story. So it's like, it's more than just being a video guy. And I hated when I was doing a lot of like music videos and stuff like that, I hated again, sometimes you're just pushed as the video guy. So they don't expect ideas from you. They don't expect you to be heard because you're like, you're just the guy behind the camera. So especially when I started doing a lot more like YouTube stuff and like podcasting and trying different things, I was like, I'm not the video guy. I do visual arts in what I produce. So that's always been the goal for me, to just be seen as someone that does visual arts, whether that's photography, graphics, videography, and just allowing that to speak for itself.
So it's sort of, it's much deeper than just being that person behind the camera.
you sort of
want to put in your input. And with the storytelling, like, if I know there's a few people that are listening, maybe they're trying to get better at their storytelling in terms of how they shoot behind the camera. And is there any tips or practical advice you can give for someone to improve the way they storytell?
I'd say research and more research. Like, just expose yourself to more things that are quality storytelling. I think over the last year, like, films and movies have been like so inspiring to me. Like, I love short films and like stuff like actual films that are going on, because again, that's where true storytelling is going on. I think it's just interesting when you have to then apply the science of storytelling to a brand video or like stuff where you're trying to convert and stuff like that. But essentially, when I realized that storytelling is the key to actually like impacting someone's day and inspiring someone and making someone do something different, that's when I was like, okay, this is the key that's going to make hopefully me stand out. And I'm still learning like how to be a good storyteller and apply it to different situations. But I think as long as you keep focusing on that and being like, okay, story, what's the story? What's the story? That kind of helps, you know, mold the things that you do.
Yeah. And do you actually plan this? Like, let's say you've got a job and you're trying to think about what's the story. Is there something you write down, as in like you're making a whole book, or is it you play it by ear?
I'd say it's more so, it depends on the situation. So like, for example, even right now I have a new job where I do like a lot of social media work. For me, it's more so, if we're doing a campaign now, I'm like, okay, what's the story of what you're trying to communicate? On the broader aspect, what's the story of the brand? Because if I understand the story of the brand, then I can then put it into a smaller scale thing here in this little campaign. So I think it's understanding those things, and you can put them into bullet points. Like, that's how I do it. It'll be like pointers. One, story starts here. Two, do you know what I mean? And allowing that to develop over time. So it doesn't have to be a big thing. It's just understanding the progression of where you want things to go.
Nah, man, that's good. And, I mean, has there been any sort of exciting work that you've been doing recently then?
Yeah, I'd say since probably like summer last year has been where I've been doing the most exciting stuff, just in completely random rooms that I feel like I shouldn't be in. Do you know what I mean? But yeah, I'd say, I'm trying to think specifically, I'd say even just understanding like being around, I think it's the people that I'm around. So for example, again, with this new job that I'm in, a lot of the campaigns and shoots and stuff that we do is with like random, there's a lot of stuff that I can't say, but again, just being around people that, for example, a photographer that might have just got flown in from Spain, or that's been on a shoot for ASOS or Boohoo. So being around those kind of people and just having conversations, and for some reason I'm able to now work with these people, like, yeah, that for me is like probably the most exciting stuff that I'm doing, and it's just evolving.
Yeah, so, and this job is full-time. So how are you balancing a full-time job and university and your other projects that you've got going on? What's the solution?
To just do it. It's one of them ones, like, because for me, like, this role that I got is, it was a role where, again, it's the perfect balance of I get to do video work, but then I'm also an ideas person. And, you know, I can see that they actually value me for what I do specifically, not just, oh, we need another person to fill this role. And that was one of the biggest things for me. So it wasn't an opportunity that I was willing to pass up like that. And I think with uni, I just did the pros and the cons, and I did the maths. I said, okay, my grades are at a good enough point to, even if I drop a few, I'm good. I don't think I'm going to drop, God willing, do you know what I mean? But then also just recognizing this final dissertation period that I'm in is a lot of independent learning anyway. Even during lockdown when I was at university, I never benefited from face-to-face teaching anyway. I love being at my own pace. So right now it kind of works even better for me because I don't have to go into uni. They know I'm in a full-time job, but I'm able to now do what I do at my own pace and get it done. So hopefully I can get that all done to a good level when time comes. But it's actually helped me a little bit, I think, for sure.
Yeah, and is it like sort of because your degree and what you do is actually related? Do you feel like you've learned much more on your degree or the practical work you're doing?
It's funny because I'd say my degree, I don't necessarily feel like it taught me a lot, which is interesting. I feel like if anything, it taught me more about, like, again, just the academic side of what I do. But in terms of the practical and how much I've applied to the real life, it's been everything I've done by myself as extracurricular for sure. But the best thing about my course is because it's so in line with what I do, a lot of my things in my portfolio are things I've done on projects for uni. So I'm able to get a grade for what I do, but it's also something that contributes to my portfolio. So it's kind of like it's worked out with the best of both.
Yeah, I mean, you keep on mentioning portfolio as well. So, like, for people listening, what is your portfolio compromise of and how do you build one?
I went about it quite wrong because a lot of people always say when you do a portfolio, make your portfolio what you want it to, what the stuff you want to do. So say, for example, if you want to do documentaries, make your portfolio about documentaries and stuff. But for me, I don't really necessarily know what I want to do in terms of the specific style or production that I want to go into. So I just kind of dashed everything into it and be like, this is everything I have. So it's funny now, like if I'm applying for a job and I get to the point where they're asking for my portfolio, I always have to tweak it and put certain things at the top, certain things around so that it kind of caters to that. It's almost like a CV, but just with videos and stuff. So it's funny how that works out.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think that's what people are doing right now. And we're still doing it with the CVs. Like,
yeah,
you apply for somewhere or even a cover letter. You basically, because everyone got the template. So you have that template in your back pocket. But depending on who the organization or company is, of course, you're going to have to tailor that and put what they want to hear or what they want to see first, if that makes sense, and make that relevant. Because I remember I was helping someone, I think she's like basically like my mentee, and I was helping her with her CV, and she had like amazing stuff, actually. Two page CV, lots of experience, and I was just like, but is this all relevant right now to the organization you're applying to? So you know, I always give that tip, like, look at, you know, when someone lists key competencies or key skills required, then they'll list they'll say what's required, then they'll list what's additional, sort of like what they would really like. So you look at that, then now you sort of match up the two. So even if a bonus tip is, even on your CV, put in that actual skill, like copy and paste in that skill that you know they really want, and put that on your CV. Then underneath, put that bullet points of your experience and how you gained that skill and how you can demonstrate that. I think that's so important. I mean, what if you have, because obviously portfolio, I mean, for creatives, a bit different, like your portfolio is full of videos and pictures, etc. But if you were to say the top three skills that you've learned, you know, in this craft, what would it be?
I think putting the actual like technical side of like videos and stuff aside, I think for me, it's been probably management. That's probably the best thing that I've learned. Even a lot of these things I'm not even great at yet. Like a lot of the things I learn every single day, but I'd say management, being flexible in the sense of if I'm freelancing and stuff as well, I have to do invoices. I have to be able to speak to people. I have to be able to network and do these different things. It's made me so flexible and all round. I think that's definitely a key. Like I can't be on set and afraid to go chat to the person that's controlling the lights. Like I have to be able to be confident enough to be like, yo, this is what we need, and assert myself in that type of way. And then for sure, I'd say lastly, leadership. That's definitely been one of the things my mentor and me have been working on a lot, like trying to get to the point where I feel confident enough to, if I am leading a shoot, am I able to communicate and get things across in a good way? And again, I'm still learning on it, still trying to do my best with it. But yo, those are the three things that I really want to kind of like keep building on.
Wow, that's powerful. So management, flexibility, and leadership. And even when you explain that, this is what I'm talking about again, like those three skills, would I necessarily sort of match up to a creative? And yes, I know you have a plethora of different skills, but you put that technical to the side because you don't want to embarrass all of us with the amount of editing and different technical terms. But no, I think those are really three serious skills. And with management as well, is that, I guess, because management and leadership sounds very, very similar. So are you talking about management of just all the stakeholders involved in what you're doing, or time, or like what is management? How does it differ from leadership?
I'd say it's more about management of self. like, again, there's so much that comes with, I think one of the hardest things, like journeys that I went through, was kind of understanding that I am not what I make all the time. Like sometimes it's easy to connect yourself to the stuff that you do. Like, especially for a lot of jobs where I'm like, I'm not passionate about this. It's just like, I care about, sometimes I'm like, oh, I don't really want to show people this, don't want to do that. But it's like, I'm not what I make. So I think it's more managing stuff like that, for example, or when a client might be like, oh yeah, can you change this? Or we don't like that, can you change that? Recognizing they're not attacking me. Like, you have to manage yourself and your own perception and your own confidence and self-awareness and stuff like that to be like, look, this is a job. They're just asking to change this. You can do that. It's not affecting who you are. Let's just make them happy and produce something that's great. That's the goal here. Do you know what I'm saying? So yeah, management of self and your own mind and being controlled enough to not be offended or, you know, demotivated, I'd say.
Yeah. And you sort of built up that, I guess, thick skin as well whilst you've been working. Because it can, I think, especially when you're producing work, as soon as you give that, those photos in a folder to the client or give the videos back, it's up for critique.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Has that ever happened
to you? That's the scariest part sometimes, for sure. Because a lot of the stuff I actually make, I'm like, this isn't how I want it to look, or this isn't, I don't genuinely think it's good like that. Like, I might be like, oh, they might be happy, but I'm like, they probably don't actually like it. But again, it's because I have a very specific thing in my head that I'm trying to achieve that might not match with what they want. Every time I send that weed transfer link over, or I'm always just like, oh. And then I see that online, I'm like, oh no, I'm about to get it.
Yeah. I mean, and so how do you deal with that, overcome that? Like, because I'm sure you must have gotten feedback on your work before that is not, it wasn't perfect.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
How do you just sort of brush it and next one you go again? Do you sit down and try to work it out, I guess, like re-edit something, retake it? Because as much as you are creative, you're also a businessman at the end of the day. Like you said, you have to do the invoices, you have to get in the sales, you have to direct. So how do you deal with that?
I just recognize, like, it's the process of things, isn't it? Like, even when it comes to, I'm sure in business and stuff, there's multiple times you have to revise different things, whether it's a business plan or whatever it is. At the end of the day, they ask for these changes. If I change it, it makes the customer happy. Do you know what I mean? As you said, it's business. It's not just necessarily, that's the hardest thing about doing like creative stuff, because it's like, it's mixing business with art, and then they're two completely different worlds. Do you know what I'm saying? But again, yeah, for me, it's just recognizing it's a process that it's, you need to go through it to get to the end result. And that's just that, really.
Yeah. And are you on your, like, is this just you by yourself in terms of freelancer, nobody helping you out?
Yeah, I said when I first started out, it was very much just myself, like solo shooting and stuff like that. But I'd say now I'm starting to recognize again how, I put a tweet out where I was like, maturing in digital creative stuff is recognizing being a one-man band shooter isn't the way you create your best work. And I was like, I think one of the recent shoots that I did was the first time I was able to like outsource the set design to someone. And that feeling of being able to like pay them to do it and me not have to think about it and just be like, I just have to think about doing the video and editing. It ended up making the whole thing so much better. Like what they came back with, I was like, I would have not even thought about that. And then I think there's people out here that edit that way too. And there's people out here that do lighting that way too. What if we just all work together and I just did what I'm good at? It makes things so much easier.
No, let's talk about that, because that's something that literally changed the way I work as well. When you realize what you're good at, you kind of want to outsource the rest to other people, because so many people, I get at the very start is difficult, because when you're starting out, you might not have that much money. So you don't want to pay other people, right? You want to do everything yourself, any and everything you can do, but you'll come to a point and you realize that, wait, hold on a minute. I'm getting paid, or people are requesting me for this specific thing, which I'm great at. So I'm going to take my time and focus on this while I'm going to give the rest out to people who are great at that as well. And it's a saying from an old book called The E-Myth. And it talks about this concept or idea of you should work on your business, not in your business. And so many people, they spend 80% of the time working in their business and not on. And what does that mean? So To put in the most simplest way, like if you were, for example, let me just use your example. So if you're trying to build up your portfolio, build up the amount of clients you get, the work you're doing, start to work with the big brands, you know, Givenchy, Gucci, or so many different brands. Mm. Instead of thinking about, okay, how are you going to get there? How are you going to improve your editing? How are you going to improve the way you outsource? How are you going to improve your network? How are you going to improve your website? Sort of the marketing strategies and so many different things to get there. You're too busy fiddling, you know, editing something on YouTube, doing timestamps, scheduling the video for 3 to 4 hours when you can just outsource that. So many people, they get, like I said, from the start, of course, you're going to have to work in your business to get off the ground. But the minute you sense that you can start outsourcing things and you can start working on the business, how is this going to grow, if that makes sense? Because when you grow the business, there'll be enough resources in order to fund whoever is helping you work in the business. And this, I read it in a book as well. I forgot what it's called, but I might link it down in our newsletter, actually. If you're listening, and make sure you're subscribed at www.valuablepodcast.com, where I link lots of different values, including the best tips of what we talked about today. But it talks about also the founder of McDonald's and how he grew that franchise because he focused to work on the business McDonald's rather than be inside flipping patties. if that makes sense.
Have you seen the documentary for that? Well, it's not a documentary, it's like a real life. They remade the story.
No, I haven't actually. What's it called?
You should check it out. It's called The Founder. It'll make you not eat McDonald's for a while, I promise you that.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Is it one of those ones that...
Yeah, it's like, that's how it was done. Okay.
Yeah, to be honest, I don't actually eat much McDonald's, to be honest. I feel like I did... When I was young, growing up, like, you know, when you're in school, chicken and chips, it's still a marvel. £1, I used to get four wings and chips, not two. Nowadays, it's two. It's
two. That's a meal. That's a meal right there.
Four wings and chips, and four wings and chips and a drink for £1.50. And I never thought about what goes in, whether it's nutritional. But I feel like just when things were so cheap back then, but nowadays, I think maybe it's because there's not a lot of McDonald's around me, to be honest, where I'm at in university, where I lived before, there was a McDonald's down the road. And so it was much, much easier. And I think that's what also these companies want to do. They want to, like, I think they, or something like, they want to put a McDonald's like on every street corner.
Yeah.
Same way Apple, they want to put an iPhone in every house. And this is actually called sort of your big mission, like the big goal. A lot of visionaries, CEOs and companies, they talk about this. They set a massive goal. For example, you know, Richard Branson, like his goal would be to, of course, create a new life in space. So, you know, part of that goal is to obviously build some rocket ships that will get there. That makes sense. And same with Windows. Windows wanted to put a laptop or computer in every single household. And I was talking about this on the Instagram live, sort of the biggest visionaries are people who want to change patterns of living. Talked about it, me and my friend Nano. So instead of thinking about how you build the biggest name, I'm going to build the biggest name, I'm going to be famous, I'm going to be known. If you change someone's pattern of living, that's going to last. What they do is changed. And if you just look at me and you and everyone else who's probably listening, the biggest companies in the world, they're successful because they changed our pattern of living. When I wake up now and if I go on my phone, I'll go on Instagram. I never used to do that before. Right? they've changed the way I'm operating, if that makes sense. So I feel that's so powerful. And just to bring it back to yourself, like, is there a major goal for Torrance Joshua? What's the end goal?
It's weird. I feel like I don't really think about it often. I think lockdown had a huge part to play with that. Like it completely destroyed my you know, motivation to like think big, because it's like, oh, you can't plan anything. But it's weird because I feel like you don't really necessarily to think out there to understand what it is that you're doing. And it's only over the last couple months or so where I've started to really to define that to myself. And there's kind of two strands in terms of like what I do on Instagram, in terms of like my personal brand and what I try and portray to the world. My mission for that has always been since day one to document the journey of discovering purpose. Again, social media has such a way of being like, oh yeah, these are the good times, these are everything that I'm doing. But again, like, I don't want my page to be everything that I've done, like my work and stuff. I want it to look at it and be like, I feel like it's almost the behind the scenes of everything that's going on. Like, it might be some work there, might be me just randomly talking to a camera about a bad day that I had or a random thought that I had that kind of impacted my day. Like, really just want to kind of showcase that. But in terms of what I do in terms of like business wise, I think even though, again, I do creative work, I've always been passionate about like starting my own business and starting, you know, and owning my own thing and having ownership that way. And now that I've started to see the way that that can happen, I'm really motivated about creating spaces for creatives and like people that want to get into this type of field to be like, oh, I can actually do this. Like, I don't have to just go down to the route of going university or doing this. And I think that's motivated me a lot through my brother as well. Like, I'm so passionate about being like, yo, bro, come on a shoot with me. Come do this. Like, you'll get paid to do this. There's opportunities here. Like, I think in life, one of the biggest things that people need to get in life is perspective. Like, once you start seeing the perspective of things that are going on and what's actually happening, then that changes the way that you operate. And it's changed the way that I operate when I see, oh, what this person's actually getting paid, or how this person's made a business plan that got them funding. It's made me realize, oh, if I can apply that to my life, so many dreams that I've actually had can now come into fruition. So it's like, how can I do that for other people, especially Black artists and Black creatives? How can I bring them in on a shoot? How can I, you know what I mean? So I think that's, for the next couple of years or so, I think that's kind of the thing that's rooting me right now.
Yeah. Perspective and purpose.
Mm.
That's what I just got from that, perspective and purpose. And I feel like perspective is a big one, because we all live in the same world, but we view it so differently.
Facts.
Right? And I especially know, because of the conversations I've been having, I've been fortunate to have with so many different people now, and everyone got a different perspective on things. Like, we might agree on the same thing, but it's just you're looking at it through a different lens. And this is why lens is so important. And I guess purpose is another thing that's so big. It's a hot topic. Everyone's speaking about purpose. What's our purpose? How do we find our purpose? Because I think the mutual agreement is that when you're operating in a place of purpose, it's like you're not happy, but you're joyful.
Yeah.
Right. Because happy is like, you can be happy, then you can be sad, but you may be sad and down, but you still have this element of joy in the process. Right. And I feel like that's when we operate in our purpose. And for you, have you figured out what your purpose is yet?
This used to be a big thing for me. Like, so like, it used to be intoxicating, thinking about, oh my gosh, I have a life that I need to live my purpose. And me and my mentor used to go back and forth about it. He used to always be like, you used to be that kid on Twitter that's like, what's my purpose? And I was. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I think, again, up until this point now, I've got to the point where I recognized I can keep trying to live my life, trying to find this end one thing that's going to make my life valuable, or that I think is going to make my life valuable. Or I can enjoy like the pursuit of it. And I've realized for me, like, firstly, the pursuit of what I'm doing, it feels more like I'm living in purpose than deciding one day my purpose is to make a documentary film that's going to change someone's life. It's like me being here and doing this and having a story to tell about what I do. That's me living in my purpose. Do you know what I'm saying? And then the thing is, one day that's going to change. One day I might go into business. I might go do something else, but that's still part of the story. So I am living in purpose because I'm doing what I'm doing. Do you know what I'm saying? I think right now I'm very, I had a funny moment at work the other day where I was just stood in the mirror when I went to the toilet, and I was like, nah, 2019 Torin would have never thought I'd be here, you know? And that just gave me such a nice feeling of being like, you're present in what you're doing. That's the biggest thing you could have, like being present in the day to day. And that's really just made me so happy. And obviously, again, like for me as well, I'm a Christian. So I believe that everything that I am, I'm made in the way that I am for a reason. So I'm really sensitive to the way that I feel and looking at, okay, I really value this time or this moment or this person I'm speaking to. why do I? There's a reason I do. And then I start looking, reverse engineering it that way and start trying to replicate those feelings. You know what I mean? So that's kind of just the mode of how I think about it.
Yeah, that's so deep, man. There's pursuit, there's happiness in the pursuit of your purpose. And there is actually no, I guess the end goal that we all want is like, who knows except God?
Yeah.
Who literally actually knows the plans? God knows the plans he has for us. And I think the most exciting thing is knowing that we I'm not the creator of myself. So if I created myself, I'll know my destiny because I created, I know why I created you, what you're meant to do. But the fact that none of us know, and you know, it's up to a higher God. So it's sort of just like in that pursuit, you're saying, you find that happiness and you find that joy, and it basically keeps you going because you don't know what's next. If that makes sense. And I can see you got that on your Instagram bio, documenting the journey of finding purpose. And I think that's so big, and I'm so happy for you, and I'm so glad you joined me on the podcast. And just, do you want to quickly just say where people can just find you and support you and just watch that journey as you find your purpose?
Yeah, I guess you can just follow me on socials. It's pretty much Torrin Joshua and everything, I believe. Social media for me is just my hub to just, again, document. So it might feel like a diary one day. It might feel like a, I don't know, like you're looking in on my life. But again, I really want to start building community and being like, look, I want people that may think the way I do, people that might not think the way that I do. But I love interacting and engaging and finding out the way that people live. So if you're interested in those kind of things, you've got a YouTube channel, starting up a mailing list again. Who knows what's to come, but that's what's there.
That's big. Make sure you are following Torrin Joshua. Again, I'll link it in the bio in the description so you can have that. But just to quickly wrap up this podcast, I pick random guests to do this with. I think it's funny and it's exciting as well. So we're gonna play a little game. So all right, cool. I'm going to count down from three, then I'm gonna say a word, and you need to tell me the first thing that pops into your head.
Okay, let's go.
Are you ready?
Let's go.
All right, 3, 2, 1. Valuable.
Time.
Kind.
Time.
Oh, time. Time. Explain that. Why time?
I don't even know. I think when you said that, my mind, it was like a jackpot machine. My mind went through all the like things in life. So it was like money, job, house, people. And then I was like, time. I was like, time's the one that I'm like, I think about the future so much. Like, I think about everything that's happening so often. Like, to the point where, again, as I said, I was there filming my documentary for the future while I was living it. Do you know what I mean? So I think for me, like, the fact that I am here and I get to try these things and use my time, like, that's valuable to me. Like, the time that I have is valuable. So I think maybe that's why my brain went there. I didn't really think about it. It was just kind of...
Yeah, perfect, perfect. No, thank you so much again for joining me on the Valuable Podcast. If you're listening, I hope you took value from this episode. And make sure to also just browse all the different episodes. But yeah, let's just thank Torrin Joshua. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having me, man. I love what you're doing, man. You're creating a space for a lot of people here. So keep doing it, man.
Thank you so much for listening. If you liked this episode, make sure to give it a 5-star rating and leave a review. Alternatively, you can send us a DM on Instagram at Valuable Podcast and sign up to our newsletter at valuablepodcast.com. Remember, increase the value you provide and you'll rise in due time.